Coming up, how to track the snowstorms that might be flooding your area, plus how to track sharks that might be flooding your beaches, and why can't you take photos in bars anymore? All that more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for the Social Hour is brought to you by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is the Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 143, recorded January 3rd, 2014. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the first episode of the Social Hour for 2014 from Twit headquarters in Petaluma, California. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and I'm still in South Florida, escaping all of the terrible weather in the Northeast, Sarah. I'm sure you've heard about it, but a lot of snow. It's like I missed a couple of major storms. I'm okay with that.
I bet you are. Yeah, I was just on my drive to work this morning. I was listening to an NPR report about what's going on in the Northeast and all this cold weather coming from Canada. And it's always interesting to hear about North American weather as reported by people in the U.K., because they're so far removed that it's sort of this, like, exotic thing that's happening. But, you know, in California, it also seems very exotic to me, because we don't see any snow.
Yeah, exactly. Well, in Florida, like I said, people are complaining because it's cold down here, and I think the high today is near 70. I think that's actually pretty beautiful. So for me, that's good. I'm good with 70. It works out. And Sarah, I have to tell you before we get started that I watched a movie the other night with my mom, and Jennifer Aniston was in it, and I know people have told you look like her before, but for some reason, the whole movie, I was thinking about you. And her name was Sarah in the movie,
what?
So that made it even more real.
Oh, that's funny. I haven't seen a Jennifer Aniston movie where her character's name is Sarah, because I would remember. But, you know, I haven't gotten that in a while, but who knows? Maybe she and I are merging again in the looks department, which is fine with me.
Hey, that's not a bad thing. The movie was called The Millers. It's kind of a silly comedy. But
Yes, haven't seen it. Yes.
Yeah. Nonetheless, I was thinking about you the other night for 2 hours straight.
Going, it's just like I'm watching Sarah. Wow. She's a little, okay, all right, Brian. Jennifer Aniston's in a little better shape than me, but I'll take it. It's a compliment. You know, Amber, I also wanted to say that this is episode 143, which, if you're familiar with the, you know, childish leet speak that we used to say over I am to each other, it's like saying, I love you. 143.
I love you, Social Hour.
Awesome. Social Hour. All right, well, let's start. We were talking about weather when we first started the show, and you found a cool link that helps people with snow issues.
Yeah, this is in New York City, and as I'm sure you know or you've heard about before, in New York, they seem to be really on the cutting edge of social media as far as the city letting their residents know what's going on. And now with the big snowstorm that has hit, they have this service that you can check out that allows you to find out where roads are plowed in real time across New York City. So you just plug in your address and you get all of the latest information. So I think this is a great way for a city to be able to notify their residents. And I know New York has a lot of interesting things like this, and just a great tool for anyone living there, especially right now with the storm.
Yeah, no kidding. I know a lot of people, because I've got friends in New York, and they're always on Twitter a couple hours before the West Coast, and so there's usually a couple hours of chatter when I get onto Twitter in the morning, and everybody's posting photos of, you know, trying to walk down to the corner store and, you know, the piles of snow. And I mean, it's hard to get around, especially in a place like New York City where it's a nice big flat grid, but you've got some snow and all of a sudden roads are closed and it's just a huge hassle. So that really does help a huge metropolitan area like that stay running.
It does. And I believe that New York City was one of the first cities to implement that service that allows you to notify the city if you came across any potholes. And it just seems like they really are at the forefront of doing things in the social space and with technology. So this one's kind of cool. I can only hope that Toronto implements something like this one day soon, because we're also getting pounded with snow while I hang out on the sunny beach.
Well, okay, so that was going to be my next question. This is New York City. Obviously, you're used to a huge metropolitan area that gets regular snow in the winter. What's Toronto's excuse, besides maybe a mayor?
I was just going to go there, Sarah. Don't worry, though. I think that he's put in his papers to run again in the next election. So we could have a few more years of comedy, and people like Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert will continue to be happy about the choice of mayor in Toronto. So I don't know what the excuse is for not having this there, but I think it would be kind of neat. We have some services, but I think we could do better. So maybe a new mayor could be a great idea, Sarah.
A new mayor will figure out how to get snowplows with little satellite cameras, and we'd all know where they are in real time. It's a serious issue. It's like knowing when the bus is coming. When's that snowplow going to clear the street?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I feel badly for people who are living in areas over the past month that have just been pummeled, whether it's by ice or snowstorms. Obviously, there's been bad weather in the south as well as far as tornadoes. So just really trying times. And I think with social media, one of the interesting things is we're able to just collect so much more information. And it's great to see government officials be able to take that information and put it into maps and interactive tools that are helpful to people. So this is just one example.
I love it. Plow NYC. Thanks, Mashable, for the awesome article. Okay, so the next one, so Amber, full disclosure, well, I think everybody sort of knows this about me, but I enjoy my wine. I often will go to the wine bar, a couple hours to kill, you know, have a little drink. And if I'm alone, I'm usually not really talking to anybody. So sometimes I'm like on my phone, you know, trying to take like artsy photos of the lights or like a wine bottle or something like that. And people kind of look at me weird, but in general, I feel like I'm, you know, doing no harm. But what about bars that would have a no photos policy? And then what would I do?
You know, I'm seeing this more and more, and I know that we've talked about it on the show in the past. The New York Times, for example, just posted an article talking about clubs in Manhattan that do have a no photos policy. And I do belong to a club in Toronto that has the same thing. You're not allowed to use your phones. There are no photos allowed in the club. And I'm seeing this everywhere. And I'm just curious in terms of people's take on this. I'd love to hear from some of our listeners or viewers what they think about this, because I cannot understand there being reason for it. I think it's almost impossible to control this. So in some ways, I wonder, you know, is it going to even be able to go into full effect if people just don't pay attention to it? Because it's too easy to use your phone and take a photo anywhere you are these days. So I don't know what's going to happen.
Well, I'm kind of with you. It's sort of like, how do you really enforce something like that? But more importantly, what's the goal of not allowing people to take photos? Does it somehow make the place seem more alluring because you don't really know what it looks like on the inside if you haven't been there? There's actually a private club. It's a members-only club that opened in San Francisco recently. I'm not a member because it's really expensive. But the whole idea is it's, you know, a bar and restaurant. It's very nice. And you go and it's, I don't know, you mingle with other people, whatever. And they have a no photos policy, but they also have a no using your cell phone policy.
Yeah. And that sounds like is it the Soho House? Because that's the place in Toronto I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's not the Soho House, but it's called the Battery in San Francisco, but it's very similar concept. And the concept is, you know, I have no problem with it, but it's like, well, no photos, okay, they reserve the right to say that, I suppose. But I mean, what if I'm quietly just making sure that, you know, my landlord sent that email that they said that they would send? It's like, I'm not sure who I'm bothering or how that somehow brings down the vibe of the place. I think it still kind of turns into, oh, no cell phones because there are privacy issues. But I don't know. I it doesn't bother me if I see anybody using their phone at a bar or club. It never has.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, one of the things that I know that happens at Soho House in Toronto is that people just line up in the hallway using their phone. So you have absolutely no privacy there at all then, because everybody is literally beside each other because they're kind of jammed into the front entrance. So I think, again, I think it's one of those things that they're trying to implement to be able to make the clubs more exclusive, but also if they have people there who perhaps are well known, who don't want photos taken of them, then that may be another reason that they do it. But at the end of the day, I mean, it really is difficult to be able to control this. So it's kind of sends a message, I think, to everyone. They just have to be smart about what you're doing. And if you're going out and getting absolutely plastered, then don't expect that because there was a no photo policy that your picture may not end up somewhere, because it's pretty easy to take a photo by like simply hiding your camera. You know, not everyone's going to be able to see it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Beanboy89 in chat says it should be a no talking on cell phones thing. Now, I'm cool with that, too. In fact, a lot of restaurants have little plaques right as you're walking in saying no talking on cell phones. You know, my gym won't let you talk on the cell phone, at least in the public areas. And I don't really want to hear anyone talking on cell phones anyway, nor do I really feel like I need to talk on my cell phone all that often. So that's different. I think this is more of a photos thing. And
yeah.
and someone else in chat, who it scrolled past me, so I don't remember your name, but said the no photos policy was actually well known. You wouldn't just be able to take like a camera into a bar and start snapping photos. It's just that now we all have cameras that are attached to our smartphones, so it's that much more convenient to take photos. I didn't know that, but then again, I wasn't taking my camera probably out for the night, so maybe it's just a continuation of, as camera phones get better, then they start resembling as if you were bringing your camera pack with you out to a bar, and bars want to have more control over the photos that represent their establishment.
Yeah, and I mean, the only thing that kind of bothers me about the whole policy is that these same bars and restaurants then have an account on Twitter, for example, maybe on Pinterest or other places online, and they want you to be able to share and give them exposure. But we live in such a world of visual social media. I mean, the expectation is they're going to be pictures. So it's a tough one. But I think at the end of the day, it's nothing that's going to be controlled very easily. So I'm not sure how much luck they'll have.
Exactly. Good luck. I've even seen some of my friends who are members to that club that I mentioned. They'll check in on Foursquare because I think there's a little bit of like, I am a club member of this cool club.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait a second, you're not supposed to be doing that.
Yeah.
You're supposed to be using your phone. How'd you do that? You're already breaking the rules.
I know, it's too easy to do. But moving on to other topics, as far as talking about animals, Sarah, because I know you like animals.
Love them.
Love them. And this is kind of a neat story. It came out about a week ago about sharks in Australia. It turns out that in Australia, they've actually tagged about 300 sharks in Australia. And the idea is that people on the beach, if they're going swimming, they'll be notified on Twitter if one of those sharks approaches a buoy in the water, so that there'll be a better notification system overall to warn people if there are sharks in the area.
Well, I have to say, as somebody who is fearful enough of sharks to keep me out of the ocean forever, I do not hate this idea. I'd love to know how they have, I guess they, you know, they're trapped and what, they get a little, I was about to say, they get a little tag put on their ear, but they're sharks, so they don't really have ears. You know, maybe, I don't know, like the edge of a fin or where, you know, wherever makes
somewhere.
The most sense.
They're tagged somewhere.
Yeah, they're tagged. I mean, it's, what kind of sharks are we talking about? Are we talking about great white sharks? Are we talking, you know, I mean, how dangerous are the sharks, I guess? Dangerous enough that you'd want to keep people out of the water. I love this idea. As long as there's minimal, I guess, you know, impact to the shark's natural habitat, because, you know, it's their ocean too. I think this is a great idea, you know, as long as the beaches in Australia are going to be packed with people. You don't want anybody getting hurt.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, based on this article, they talked about how many shark attacks there are each year in Australia. In 2012, there were approximately 14. And it's interesting when you see the tweet that goes out, for example, they have one here that said, tagged bronze whaler shark detected at Garden Island North End Receiver. Now, I think this is a fabulous idea as well, but the first thing that comes to mind when I see this is how close is this to the shore, you know? I don't know if this would make me more fearful or less fearful, but in some ways I would just be looking at my Twitter feed the whole time and thinking I'm just not going in at all, because I'd be waiting for that tweet that maybe I missed or something while I was in the water.
Exactly. Or, it's like, how real time is this? I mean, if you see a tweet, you figure if it comes in right now, was the shark there a few minutes ago? Yeah, are they like swimming up into the breakers? Are they way out to sea? You've got all these parents on their phones like, no, come on back. There might be a whaler shark nearby. It seems like this is a better idea than to just wing it.
Yes.
As far as swimming with sharks. But it could be complicated.
It could, especially those sharks that aren't tagged. I mean, I'm sure it's not like all the Twitter sharks are just hanging out together. You know, it's like, oh, this is only an area for Twitter sharks, right?
Exactly. You know, there are, I mentioned great white sharks, and I'm actually woefully not aware of what kinds of sharks are indigenous outside of this part of Australia. But in the Pacific Ocean, there are great white sharks, and they kill people. And, you know, surfers lose their legs, and you know, they kill seals as well. And it can be absolute life or death situation, and it's scary. And I want nothing to do with it. But I have I follow a couple. It's always Twitter. I follow a couple Twitter accounts that are kind of like Ocean Beach, which is our city beach in San Francisco, Ocean Beach related. You know, there's a cleanup effort on the beach today, or hey, great white shark spotted, you know, bit somebody's surfboard or that sort of thing. And so there is kind of this neat ocean culture people that come together that is really it's helpful and fun to spread that kind of information. There you go. Ocean Beach Bulletin is exactly one of them. Good work, Brian. And I love all of that. But again, that's just relying on anybody who might have seen something or might have been there. Mm-hmm. I like the idea of if we've got a sea life that's tagged, you can at least just be a little bit more sure that there is something out there rather than waiting for there to be an incident.
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting. And I mean, I think it's something that hopefully they'll end up tagging more sharks, assuming, like you said, that it's not harming the sharks at all and making people just more aware of what's swimming out there in the water. But like I said, I'm with you. You know, it's weird. I used to do a lot of boogie boarding when I would come down to Florida. I was always in the water. And the more I learn about the water here and how there are sharks for sure down here, the more I just almost can't even go in. It's kind of sad, but I don't know what I would do if I saw a shark. I'm not willing to risk it at all.
Yeah.
I
had a, never really got into boogie boarding, but I had a short stint as a wannabe surfer because, I'm sure it was boy related, but I really like, I decided I really wanted to give it a go. I wanted to be a surfer girl. And, there were just a couple incidents out there where I was like, you know, I just can see myself drowning in the ocean because I don't have any business being out here. And then there's sharks too. So that's, you know, that's just, I'll just stay on the sand and take photos.
Yeah. Go in the pool.
Exactly. I like those too. Or just lay next to the pool. That's good.
Yeah.
Quick reminder that, Amber and I are officially on our last episode of our we're actually not at our regular time on Fridays because I'm moving later, so Amber graciously agreed to do this earlier in the day. But starting next week, starting on episode 144, Amber and I are moving to our new time, which is Thursdays at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. We're very excited about that. We hope you can all watch us live. Of course, if you can't, well, you have many options. twit.tv/TSH is our website, so you can watch all of the videos there. All of our episodes are there. Never miss a show. Or, of course, you can subscribe to the show via either audio or video feeds. You know, we hope you like the video feed. You know, we're sitting here being animated and everything, and Amber's got her webcam in Florida and usually Toronto. But a lot of people tell us that they listen to us while they're commuting or while they're, I don't know, doing housework or on a run or that sort of thing. So we just want you to enjoy the show. So we give you a lot of different options, whatever works best for you. But yeah, if you subscribe to the show, then you never really have to think about when we're recording live or if that's convenient for you. Of course, you can email us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. And yeah, there's our website there, twit.tv/TSH. Amber, before we move on, right before the show, one of our esteemed engineers, Alex Gumpel, said that he had a present. And ooh. Alex told me that he had a present for me /him/Brian, our TD. I don't really know why I get to do the honors. But that he's been excited about since even before the holidays. So I thought it's apparently social related. So I thought maybe we could all just open it together. What do you
say? Amazing. I like the box. Nice shiny box.
It's very nice. We got a little thing on top. Okay. All right. Well, let's do this. Oh, are we going to? Okay. This is good. Very good, Brian. Thank you. Great angle.
Good job, Brian.
It's an unboxing of a gift. Oh. Ooh.
Blue tissue paper.
Ooh. It's very Twitter blue so far. And what is we got doges. What are they? Are they ceramic? Are they rubber? Oh my goodness.
That's very cute.
Now, Alex was quick to say, only one of them is for you. The other one is for me, and then the third one is for Brian. Amber, you have one in spirit, of course.
In spirit. It's beautiful. Very cute.
That is the best thing I've ever. Now, Alex, I know you're off camera right now, but I mean,
it's from Shapeways.
It's 3D printed. Oh my god!
Wow,
this is the best. Oh, it's my little little friend. Can he be on my shoulder for the show? This isn't going to end well. Here, take your little doge.
Hey.
I know people say it's supposed to be pronounced dog, but I mean, I think it's...
Yeah.
Oh! I think okay. I think it's
the
like...
doge just fell.
I think it's like a gif/gif thing, where it's like,
you know...
I say doge. Yeah. All right, Brian, I'm going to keep your little doge safe. Well, this is a lot. I mean, memes that go 3D printing are memes that I can get behind. He's just going to watch me. He's going to watch the rest of the show.
we'll just cut to him every now and again.
Yeah, just see what he has to say. He looks a little cross-eyed. This is a very nice 3D printer. Alex, you're a gem. Thank you. Thank you for thinking of me. You always know just the right thing to give me.
That is very sweet.
All right, Amber, what do you say we move on to the social tip of the week?
Yeah, you know what? I'm really excited about this social tip because I was looking for something that I thought was kind of interesting, something we hadn't talked about before, and I stumbled across this article on marketingland.com called Why Social Media Marketers Need to Follow the Weather. And considering we've had such crazy weather all across the U.S., Canada, and other parts of the world, I thought people may want to check this out. Some really interesting stats as far as when you should be posting and sharing information on social media sites based on when people are interacting. And I threw some stats into the rundown as far as information like this. Fans react on average 42% of people post more often when the sun isn't shining, and on rainy summer weekends posts receive nearly twice as many reactions, and interactions on posts increase about 90% when it is raining. And I know people are thinking, oh, big surprise, people are on social media while the weather is bad because they're not outside doing stuff. But I do think this really impacts when and how people should post if they are trying to get traction out there. So some really great stats, and you can check these out in our show notes as well.
I mean, what do you think it is? Do you think if the weather's not good, there's a better chance that you're indoors, and there's a better chance that you might be sitting at your computer and kind of wanting to connect with other people since there's maybe less likelihood that you're out and about?
I think so. I mean, it was funny. I was mentioning this stat to Chris before the show, and he said, of course, because we both used to work in daily news and know that one of the things you always lead with is the weather when the weather is kind of dramatic, if, you know, there's a big rainstorm or snowstorm. And we just know at the end of the day, we're all human. We all love talking about the weather. And many times, not only are we indoors, but we could be talking about the weather through social and sharing pictures. And it's just human nature. So if you want to capture more people and you want to know when the largest audiences are online during storms and big rainstorms, snowstorms, whatever it might be, that's a great time. But in saying that, Sarah, we should also mention the times like when Hurricane Sandy happened, when marketers went online and tried to take advantage of that storm and had the storm deals. And there was a lot of backlash there because they were kind of taking advantage, I think, of people online and really not being sensitive to the storm that was taking place.
Yeah, exactly. It's almost, I'm sure it's been done a million times, but the companies that are trying to, you know, if you are a for-profit company, it's just never a good idea to be like, hey, why don't you think about us during this, you know, your time of need when people are, you know, losing their homes. Bad idea in general. Like, companies continue to do it, and we do profile those companies quite a bit. But, yeah, it's interesting that weather obviously accounts for mood. A lot of people get, you know, there's an actual disorder that's seasonal, you know, and people... you know, get depressed in the wintertime, you know, and things are darker. And so I can see that it could reflect these shifts in the way that people communicate with each other. And that communication has always been there. But now we've got these tools where there are actual metrics that say, hey, when it's raining, you're going to see more tweets from this area of the world. And it's kind of fascinating.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's one thing for marketers. It doesn't mean that you have to always be pushing the products or services that you're selling, but it could just mean that, okay, there's a big snowstorm in the Northeast. Maybe you share that link that we just talked about, Sarah, as far as notifying people or giving people access to when snowplows were in their neighborhoods. So maybe it's more helping people through some of these weather times as far as giving them content that would be useful to them, right? So less about pushing your own products and services and more about just having conversations. And I think we really talked about this a lot in the show. That's kind of how social media works best, you know, helping people, having conversations, listening, interacting, all of those basic things instead of just pushing products.
Exactly. Yes. And that's the toughest part of the job, right? As a marketer, is figuring out how to have an authentic voice, but still be representing a company if that's indeed what you're doing.
Exactly.
All right, moving on to our spotlight. This one is called Pick a Moment, P-I-C. So it's photo-related, I think.
It is. This is an app, and as far as I understand, it's relatively new. I came across it on TechCrunch, and what it allows you to do is to pick a moment in the past and figure out what photos have been shared at that time. Now, this could be from, as they say, from moments ago or even months ago. So you could choose a certain date and then see some of the images, like Instagram images, for example, or photos that people post when they check in on Foursquare, and just get a sense of maybe the vibe at that time when people were sharing a lot of images. And it's just kind of a neat little tool if you love photos and want a new way to be able to search through them.
Huh. Now, I love the look of this. I think this is a really nice looking app. And I get that it would be pulling from data that already exists. And mm-hmm. and it kind of serves a specific purpose, right? You maybe wouldn't go to Instagram because you were looking for a certain kind of weather in a certain region on a certain day that was back in time. I guess you could use it that way, but I don't even know how. You can't even really set a date range if you were in the explore section. So this is kind of neat. I mean, is it like for nostalgia purposes or for historical purposes or just kind of a fun tool that hasn't been done before in an app, I wonder?
I think it's kind of a fun tool. I mean, I think TechCrunch kind of described it in the best way, that it isn't something that you're going to use every single day, but maybe you're just curious. Maybe there was a big news event and you wanted to see what was posted and you're just checking in on that day. Maybe you just had your birthday. You wanted to see some photos from that day that were shared on Instagram. So it's one of those things that, again, I think it's more for people who just love images and want to be able to dive into some images based on different dates and want a quick little app to be able to do so. So it's more of I think almost like a discovery app in some ways, just a fun thing that you just dive into and then you leave, but just a new way to discover all of the images that people have shared in the past.
That's great. I love it. This actually kind of reminds me of, this is, you know, the song Today Was a Good Day by Ice Cube. That was really random.
I don't think so.
You have totally heard it. It's not
really?
That new. Yeah, it's kind of old. It's But the whole song is about Ice Cube saying that he had a really good day in Los Angeles, because usually his day is filled with, you know, helicopters overhead and people are, you know, getting shot and, you know, he lives in the hood. And somebody, and he's talking about the day is so nice and there's no smog in LA that day. And there are all these details about why the day is so great. And somebody sort of went back in time. There you go. That's Ice Cube. Circa Today Was a Good Day. Somebody went back in time and was like, well, what day was he talking about? Because if you think about, like, the fact that no helicopter was flying overhead and there was a non-smoggy day and there was a basketball team that had beat another basketball team that day. And it was like there were all these little pieces that got put together, and somebody took it really seriously and was like, that day was October 27th, 1991 or something like that. And I feel like something like Pick a Moment could be helpful for a very specific research project like that.
Yeah, I think it is really specific. It's not, like I said, it's not something that you would use all the time, but it could be interesting. Yeah, kind of a research project, a way to just, you know, if you're a student or something, maybe you have some type of project you have to do. So it's just a fun one. I mean, there's so many apps out there, right? It's hard to be able to cover them all, but this one is something I haven't seen before. So in that respect, I thought it was kind of interesting.
I like it too. In fact, we have another spotlight, our second spotlight, and this is about, well, it's about podcasting, and you and I know a thing or two about podcasting.
It is. And I was thinking about you when I stumbled across this, because I know you love music.
I do.
And I thought you would think this was kind of interesting. This is a podcast, unlike anything I've seen before. The concept of the podcast is they interview a musician and they ask the musician to, or artist to, take apart their songs kind of piece by piece and tell the story of how those songs were made. And one of the first guests they've had is Jimmy Tamborello, I guess, from the Postal Service. And what he does is he talks about how The District Sleeps Alone Tonight, one of their very popular songs, he talks about all the instruments, the influences, and then they play kind of pieces of the songs throughout the podcast.
Oh, I love this. I actually love that song. It's one of
I love
my
that
favorite
song
Postal Service songs. That's so cool. That's one of the great things is, like, when you when a song resonates with you, and, you know, often it's lyrics related, but it doesn't have to be. You wonder, what's this really about? You know, what was going through these musicians' minds? Is it about a person? Where were they recording in the studio, or you know, did they write out in the cabin in the woods? I really do think those things often. So to be able to have an explanation that's all part of, you know, the song that you like anyway, I'd totally be into that. Maybe not for every song, but I think what a great idea for a podcast.
It is. And I think, you know, I always imagine those stories as well behind songs. And many times, actually almost all the time, I'm wrong as far as the meaning of the song. So it's neat to be able to hear from the artist and get some perspective on how that song was made. Now, I discovered this on Waxy Links. And as far as I can tell on the site, it looks like there has only been one podcast so far. I hope that they do others. But I think it's a brilliant idea. And I think it's something that could get artists really excited too, because I'm not sure they even get to tell the story of the songs that they have created all that much. And this is just a really great social way to be able to do it and to share it as well.
Exactly. I think, you know, more often than not, if a song is really popular, if an artist is lucky, they go on tour and then they play the song like a million times. And I'm sure that's very rewarding, but it must be nice to be able to pick apart something that it might have taken a lot of work and effort and is very meaningful to the artist. So Song Explorer Podcast. I love it.
And talk about it in a more meaningful way, too, right? You know, yeah. On regular radio shows that they go on, they talk to Ryan Seacrest, and he asks them one question. They have 15 seconds to answer, and then the radio show cuts to break. So this is what makes podcasting so great. It's just that long format that people can actually talk more and expand on things and get more in-depth. So it seems like a great platform for any artist.
Love it. Song Explorer Podcast. Now, The Social Hour, of course, is a social place. We like hearing from you. We love everybody who's able to join us in chat and is able to give us real-time feedback while we're doing the show. Of course, I mentioned earlier in the show, thesocialhour@twit.tv is where you can email us, or you can leave us a voicemail as well at 2626-SOCIAL. But this week, I thought we'd highlight a tweet that we got from Alex Nath on Twitter. And he was sending me to an Android app I've never heard of. He says, have you heard of an Android app called Saga, life logging app that pulls from a lot of other social apps? The website is getsaga.com. Well, I do not have an Android device, so sometimes I feel like I am just totally behind on all the cool Android stuff that may not have come to iOS yet. However, the good news is it's actually on iOS and Android. So it's, you know, it's not covering all operating systems, but it's covering the biggest two. So I thought, well, okay, let's just take a look and see if we like the premise of this. Record your life automatically and share it with the people that you care about. Saga automatically records your life story as told by the places you visited and the things you've done. So capture every moment in your life log. Okay, stay charged. They say that they've made a location-aware life-logging app that won't leave you with a dead battery. Okay, so the battery works fine. Share effortlessly by including your friends. Okay, so here's where it gets interesting, because at first I'm sort of like, I don't know, that sounds like just being social. So you've got a variety of fitness apps that apparently work with Saga. You've got location apps like Foursquare or Facebook. You can certainly use that way. Goodreads is a social book reading club type of a thing. Mood Panda, I don't know. Social Cam is more video. So I don't know, Amber. What do you think? Does it seem like if you are familiar with all these services, which I am for the most part, but I use them separately, it makes more sense to condense them into something like Saga? Because this is a tough thing for companies to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think it does. The only thing that I wonder is that for some people, are all those social networks very different places for them, in the sense that they don't really want it condensed into one experience because they have different communities and different places. So in that way, I wonder if there is a need for it. But I do know, I mean, I think I've heard the term life logging for many years now. And it seems like one of those things that people just, you know, they love it. They love that idea of being able to just share more and more.
Yeah. I mean, I don't hate the idea of having a place where I could access and get more data, not just for myself to share out, but from my friends in one place. But I find that, you know, a company like Twitter, for example, or Facebook, they don't really want to work with apps like this because they want you to enjoy their own experience, which is often ad supported. So if you've got this data that's coming in from a bunch of different places, And a company like Twitter is not really on board because they're not pushing you to an app like Saga. I think it's really difficult for an app like this to gain a lot of traction, because with so much app competition now, that especially in the social space, you have to have millions of users right away in order for it even to really make an impact. And I think that's why you hear about a company like Path. People say, ooh, Path is struggling, even though, I mean, my Path feed is still pretty active. But, you know, the user base is not growing exponentially. And I think more and more I keep seeing these apps come out where it's like, I don't think there's anything wrong with this app. I think it's a great idea. But how are you going to get all those millions of people to start going through a different process in their social sharing each day? Most of us, well, you and I are different because we do this for a living, but most people maybe just say, oh, I love Instagram, or I love Google+, or I love Twitter. But they're probably not wanting to juggle more and more. That would just be my first reaction.
Yeah, I think that is an issue. And you know what? I think maybe it doesn't matter anymore if you're able to get millions and millions of people. And it's one of those things, maybe with apps, even if you get small devoted communities or dedicated communities, then maybe you can still have some type of business there, right? So I do wonder about that sometimes, because I always say on the show that, you know, are we ever going to have a Facebook again? Probably not. Probably not going to have that mass number of people who join one social network, but there will be these smaller networks and these smaller apps. I mean, there are probably apps out there, Sarah, that we've never even heard of, we've never even discussed on the show, that maybe have a million users, but they're just smaller communities. And it seems like there's an appetite for them. I was just reading a stat recently about the number of apps downloaded in 2013, and I believe it was somewhere in the tens of billions. So people want apps, right? And this seems to fulfill some type of desire from people. I wonder how long they can last, right? You know, it's new and shiny and trendy at first, but what is the long-term plan for some of these companies?
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's funny because just because we were talking about that music podcast that sounded really good, and you said, well, you know, hopefully they'll have a lot more episodes because it looks like they're just in their infancy now with a great idea. And I was talking to somebody about just the kind of like internet television model recently, and he didn't really know anything about what, you know, you and I do for a living. And I was describing what's so great about this model is that you can be a lot more specific about the kind of content that you talk about, and your audience doesn't need to be in the millions necessarily. That would be nice. Mm-hmm. But, you know, advertisers understand, ooh, this is actually a more targeted, specific group of people who really want to talk about social media for an hour with you and me, and that's worth something. And so you end up, not always, but having a smaller group of people who are much more focused on the content at hand, and that is more valuable. So there's less emphasis on more people and more emphasis on people who have specific interests. And I think for apps, we're not quite there yet. You've got these niche apps that, if they don't have that huge user base, are kind of doomed to fail. And I hope that changes, because again, there are all these people who are making really creative things and are really smart and have tools that some of us would love very much. But right now, the way that app stores and app marketplaces are put together, it's all about these huge, huge hits. And I don't think that that's not the right answer for everybody.
It isn't. And I think a lot of people are looking for apps that are new and really innovative. And so many of the apps I see today are kind of copycat apps. So you see an app come out, someone just evolves on it and does something tweaks a little bit and comes out with kind of a similar thing, but it has maybe a few enhancements here and there. But I think there are also fewer of those apps or networks. And I think the people who can come out with something truly innovative and something that is different, then I think they have a good chance of getting the more loyal communities. Because otherwise, I think it's hard to have loyalty within the app space, right? I mean, are you really loyal to your apps? Maybe podcasts because you like the personalities, but the app, it's a tough sell sometimes.
Yeah, it really is, because it's all about who else is on the app. You know, the app itself, I don't have loyalty to a bunch of code. I might have loyalty to an app that I know that you're using, and I don't want to just kind of abandon whatever connection we have on that app. Although, Amber, I will say, this is probably the least social app that I've ever put so much effort into. Have we talked about my virtual pet on the show yet?
I don't think so.
Okay, well,
what is this?
Okay, so this is my virtual pet, This app is called Hatch, and he's my little Fugu, which is a certain kind of animal, and I have to feed him. And it's, you know, it's part of Game Center on iOS, and he gives me little treats here and there. And I have to, you know, kind of clean up his little area. But, I mean, this is one of the biggest time wasters I have ever bought into. And I have to give him love by giving him a little scratch. And then he gives me little hearts. And this is it. I mean, this is all I'm doing. And I have to say, there's so much guilt involved with, look, the apple got rotten, so I have to clean up around here. So much guilt involved with not feeding him and not cleaning up after him after he goes to the bathroom, that I'm on the app several times a day, and it's bad. It's really bad, because I know that this is not real. This is not a real animal. This is just, you know, some programmers having fun, and I've totally bought into it, and I don't want him to die. So...
Okay. Sir, I have to say that just because I'm such a Daily Show fan, I literally can see Jon Stewart, if he ever watched our show, which probably isn't happening, but if you just took that clip of you saying, hey, Amber, have you heard of this? And talking about your little animal and the guilt, how that would make a great news clip on the show.
Seriously. I mean, it's pathetic. Sometimes I take this out at a, you know, a restaurant or something, and someone will look over my shoulder at a stranger and will say, what are you doing? And I'll say, oh, it's my little virtual pet. And, you know, it's like as soon as the words start coming out of my mouth, I realize I've lost them. I'm the weirdo. But really, okay. I mean, I guess just because we're talking about apps where there's no loyalty, I'll tell you what. Once it gets into parenting, I'm like, I can't be a bad parent. I have to be on that app all the time. They're probably getting all sorts of information about me and my sleeping habits.
That's kind of the catch, though, Sarah, right? They've been able to touch a human emotion, right? And I think that's where it's interesting. Like, I think of apps that I'm loyal to, things like FreshBooks, because it makes invoicing so easy, so I save money, so there's a lot of passion, and I just love that app. Or AnyList, because I can manage a grocery list, and Chris and I can go to the grocery store and not duplicate what we're buying. Or an app like My Virtual Pet, because you want to take care of it. I mean, you have to have that emotional part that kind of gets people coming back for more. But I think sometimes with these apps, they just don't have that, right? They don't have that kind of human need or connection, and they're missing that piece of it. So it's interesting to see the companies who are able to make them and make them kind of sticky, like the app that you just showed, which is very cute, and the companies that just kind of miss the mark a little bit.
Totally. Yeah, it's very much a new Tamagotchi, as Ronnie points out in chat. I don't know how, Brian, you were just waiting for somebody to say that word, weren't you? He was just waiting. I never had a Tamagotchi, but you know, virtual pet, I'm a sucker. All right, Amber, let's move on to Rad or Fad. This is the, you know, this is what we do right before the end of every social hour, where we decide if we think something is cool or not.
Okay. This is a tough one. I'm kind of on the fence with this one. It is also an app, and it's very social. It's called, it used to be called Gym Pact, and now it's just called Pact. And the idea is it helps you get in shape by allowing you to earn cash for living a healthy life. So when you sign up, you commit to doing certain things, like exercising a certain amount, eating healthier, you know, drinking enough water, all those types of things. And based on how much you do that, you will be able to get money, small amounts of money. And the money comes from the people who have committed to do the same sort of things, but don't do it. So you're making money off the members who don't commit to the exercises and the lifestyle that they have signed up and said they were going to do.
I don't hate this, because motivation comes in many forms. Mm-hmm. And I think, I think this actually is, it's sort of a perfect time, because at the beginning of the year, gyms always see, you know, a huge spike in membership signups, because people say, hey, you know, I've resolved to be healthier in the new year, or, you know, this or that. And I've been guilty of this in the past, absolutely, where at least I say, if I'm paying for something, then at least I'll go because I'm paying for it. But that isn't always the case. However, everybody likes to get a little change, pocket change here and there. And I think positive reinforcement for, you know, making healthy decisions, that almost makes more sense. Because if you're paying for something and then you don't go, and then you've got all this guilt associated with it, then it just kind of turns into these negative feelings, and then you're just never going to run because you're like, you already hate yourself. So this is more of like a, it's like a, I mean, I just keep on running. Give me dollars.
Yeah. I know. It's interesting, right? I mean, it's neat when you think about how it actually works. In the article that I found on TechCrunch, it says, when you sign up for a pact, you select a certain amount, $5 or $10, that is deducted from your credit card or PayPal account for each day you miss. If you hit your goal, then you get paid a reward ranging from 30 cents to $5 per week as soon as you accumulate $10. So I think there probably are people out there where they find out that, hey, you know what? Maybe I've only earned, like you said, maybe it's like $20 over the course of a couple of weeks. There is that incentive, right? You feel like you're doing something right, and there's a like you say, a tiny bit of change that goes along with it. So it's interesting to be able to do something like this, because I think people are always motivated by money, and it's also hard to work out and eat right. And then there's a question people probably have, well, how do you prove that you've done it, right? Mm-hmm. And it seems like they've built in some mechanisms to be able to allow people to prove that they've done things. Like if you eat veggies, you have to take a picture of the veggies. And sure, people are going to scam the system, like, you know, it happens all the time. But there are that big percentage of people who probably are going to try to be honest about it.
You know, it's funny in chat, people are saying, yeah, this is just, it seems like it would be easy to game. And that's true. That's always sort of the case. I feel like this is something like, let's take Foursquare just as a, hey, I'm the mayor of my coffee shop, right? Well, I could lie and I could just check in when I like drive by down that block. And yeah. I know that people do that. And it's like, yeah, you can do that, and I'm sure that's happening, but I don't do that. There's a little bit of an honor system, I think, that you're just going to have to buy into if you want to have any fun with an app like Pact. And especially when it turns into physical exercise, because a lot of us struggle with getting enough of it and feeling like we're in good shape and feeling healthy, that it's a let's all band together and cheer each other on, because it's not really about losing or winning money, right? It's about following through with what you said that you would do to make yourself feel good.
Yeah, and if you do have that community reinforcement, and another thing I should also mention is the app looks like it's beautifully designed. I mean, even just the kind of little, I don't want to call them badges, but just the icons that you get as you complete your goals of a certain number of days in terms of eating your veggies or exercising, whatever it might be. I mean, it looks like a slick app. So just the bonus of having a little bit of money added on and putting your, you know, money down and saying that you're going to commit to something, I think it's kind of cool. The more I think about it, I think it is kind of rad.
I think it's rad. Yeah.
Yeah, it's thinking differently, too.
It is. And I think I would love to know if anybody is using this app, because feedback about your experience would make it either all the more rad or fad, because, of course, it's all about if it really works well and if it helps motivate you. But in general, I think it's rad, especially because, Amber, I'm not feeling at the top of my physical game right now at all. You know, I've kind of like, I'm moving and I'm busy and the holidays, and it's just like, ugh, January is all about starting over in a lot of ways. Yeah. So something like Pact might be something that I could work into my routine and end up feeling more warm fuzzies in the process.
Yeah, I think it's kind of rad. So I agree with you. Maybe this is a challenge to some of our listeners or viewers. They could try it out and let us know what they do think of it. And if they do use it, and if they use it more than just a few days, maybe a few weeks, and see if it actually works. Because I'm all for people getting healthier. And if it takes something like this to help out, then that's awesome.
I agree. Well, with that, we have come to the end of our hour. It's a little less than an hour today because we had a shorter show than normal. But, Amber, I'm wanting you to get back into your 70-degree weather down in Florida. I mean, can't miss that. What are you, 10, 11, 12? Yeah, it's lunchtime for you. You gotta go get some lunch out on the veranda somewhere.
Just hanging out. I have to say, even just doing the show this much earlier, I realized how much more awake I am than later on in the day. So I'll be looking forward to the 2 p.m. Eastern time change next week when we start doing the show at that time slot.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that. Just a reminder, if you're joining us a little bit later, that Amber and I, starting next week, switch to our new time on Thursdays at 11 a.m. Pacific. I'm going to get that eventually. It's going to stick. 2 p.m. Eastern time. We're very excited about it, and we hope that you can join us live. If not, of course, twit.tv/TSH is our website. You can keep up with us there. You can subscribe to the show. All links to all episodes, including Doge, are all there as well. thanks, everybody, who joins us each week. It's super fun. All right, Amber, have a wonderful week down in Florida. Will you be back in Toronto when I see you next Thursday?
I will not. Ooh. I will be here for one more show, and then I will be back. So nice. I'm milking the time down here as long as I can.
Excellent.
Until the bad weather goes away.
Don't blame you. Well, enjoy that, and everybody have a wonderful week. And until next time, mark your calendars for our new showtime on Thursdays, and I will see you online. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Erin MacArthur, and we'll see you next week.